Very, very excellent story to listen to and learn from. Good morning and welcome back to the Counselor's Cafe. This is where we have been focusing on the care and feeding of the mind, the psyche, the spirit, whatever it is that makes us human, conscious of self, capable of change, and free to make choices. In the past, we've talked about a little bit about psychology, a little bit of a philosophy, and we've added a whole bunch of other topics that we've gone off from that had some relationship to psychology or philosophy. But what we are doing today is saying goodbye to the Counselor's Cafe. We are winding down. We're closing up shop. A friend of mine used to say when we both volunteered at the community kitchen, I'm locking the door and mopping the floor. And that's what we're doing here now at the Counselor's Cafe. It's been a great, 2.5 years of having conversations with people in the mental health field. We've just had a great time. But what we're going to do now is move on to something else. Starting September 1st, Paul Nagy. Okay, I'm putting other mics up right now.
We've exhausted the meaning of existence, in case you haven't been listening. And now that we've done that, the Counselor's Cafe has spent itself into a new incarnation. It's gone from being, a caterpillar and becoming a butterfly?
Well, I wouldn't call it a caterpillar. It is, in the past, we've had some really great people on talking about the psychology of humor. Rocco, grab a chair and come on over. We've had people from Club Nova on. We've had Mental Health Association on. We've talked about a lot of things with a lot of people who brought, I think, something worthwhile to the community who were listening. But, you know, you reach a point where it's time to close that up. And we've got, I think, the Carborough Book Beat, which is starting September 1st, is going to be really exciting. What's interesting is we can still be bringing in topics from an even wider spectrum, and we've gone pretty far afield
and what's amazing with the Carborough Book Beat is we've discovered that even the dust on the street is writing a book secretly. Everybody is writing a book.
And everybody has a book in them somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got 20 in me, and I haven't gotten them on paper yet, as Richard knows, because I've talked with him before. Sitting in with us today, first is Paul Nagy, who you've been heard again in the past couple of weeks, and here at Touchstones on Tuesdays at 11 o'clock. And Richard is hanging around to stay with us a little bit longer this morning, mm-hmm. Because we're going to be talking about a special show that's coming up next Monday. And we have Rocco with us, who's on his last trip so far here during the week because
probably, Audrey,
you'll be in going back to school soon.
It would be good to get your input next week on the special show.
As I was saying with Richard, if I'm here Monday, I'll be.
I really, really, you know, hope.
And
you can
I hope
do that.
I helped with when you called me on my show Saturday and put you on the air.
Yes,
through the phone.
Yes.
We had someone call back afterwards.
Great.
So they heard your message.
Well, your show is the best place to put messages out because mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. listen. Mm-hmm. He's got the great music show. But I asked Richard to hang in here this morning because next Monday, as I said, we're going to have a special show called Carborough Talks About Race. And about a year and a half or so ago, we took about the three Monday morning shows and put together talking about the psychology of race.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're getting a little bit broader this time, and we want to bring in the whole community out there, so all the listeners. Richard, why don't you jump in and talk about what we're going to be asking people, conversation focus.
We're going to be asking people to have the conversation with us. Just join in and begin to start where they are, wherever you are, start this conversation. I think that a lot of people are sometimes fearful because there may not be a level of trust, or there may not be as many vocabulary words, at least nice vocabulary words, that people can use.
On the air.
On air. Right, right, right. So, but what we hope to have happen is to, number one, build a level of trust. Number two, start to have folks talk about this, talk in a common language. I think oftentimes what happens about across race is what sometimes happens either across gender or across age groups is that there may not be the same common word. So you may use one word that I may not be familiar with because it's used in a different context in a different place and time. And so what we hope to have happen is as many people as possible that are willing to actively engage in this conversation and then kind of toss it on the table and see if we can pull some positivity out of it.
And some continuation. I came up with these three little things that don't necessarily match each other grammatically, but we want you to care enough to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to be brave enough to trust. And you want to be smart enough to be willing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we can do those three things, we'll be accomplishing something.
We'll be moving along.
And I haven't talked with anybody here yet, so I'm just popping this out to the world as well as people here, put a table out in front of the station,
mm-hmm.
and maybe have some flyers, maybe a questionnaire that I was going to ask you to put together, Richard.
Okay, no problem.
So that people could come by and just listen in. If we don't have our outdoor speakers hooked up, we'll have a radio out there so people can hear it.
Yeah.
And get involved just by walking by.
Let me ask you all some questions.
Uh-huh.
Audrey and I have been bouncing. We've had been bouncing these types of conversations around for a while uh-huh. now. There are a couple of things that I don't know. Part of what happens with this conversation is where you enter, what door you enter into. And I think that sometimes what happens is that there are some things that may be too sensitive to start off.
Uh-huh.
For example, in the Independent over the last few weeks, they had uh-huh. this piece called White Denial.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my sensitivity towards this stuff is clearly different than many other people. I spend probably an inordinate amount of time talking about race
uh-huh.
And to the point where other folks can't necessarily engage in some uh-huh. of these conversations. Turn off, turn on, and that's fine. That's okay. But I'm curious as to, there's a couple of things going on. For example, Obama just released this idea about reparations, not on the table.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I'm curious to get a feel from you all, what do you think are those things that probably should be left off the table? Is reparations left off the table? I don't know. I'm asking. Is this idea of white denial about race, should that even be left off the table? What I think...
Well, that would be the elephant in the... That would be the elephant in the living room because white denial is the bulwark of racism in our society.
Uh-huh. It is, but in my point put it this way, when me and my wife are having a discussion mm-hmm. and it turns ugly,
yes,
you know, mm-hmm. and it's about say one of the kids or something like that. If we're trying to get to the points where we in kumbaya and love again, we don't go right back to that conversation. Instead, we try to find some type of common ground that we can then move forward on.
Right.
And what I'm interested in is kind of giving a sense about, well, what are the things that are outliers that we probably shouldn't be. I mean, you don't try to solve the issues in the Middle East on the first day.
Right.
You may want to table some of those heavier mm-hmm. pieces and let's see what is it that we really can get around and focus in on together as a group. Method.
I'm thinking that one, the larger issues like reparations that Obama has brought up is something that maybe goes beyond Carrboro. At this particular, maybe not.
Sure, sure.
But at this particular time, I would really like this area to focus on what's going on here and now as a starting point towards being able to talk with one another, as you said. And definitely, you can't leave white denial off the table. It has got to be on it.
But the thing is then, of course, how do you approach white denial? The one of the reasons why white denial is there, going from my own experience, is that there is this incredible amount of guilt. That there's a resistance to seeing that, I've been privileged all my life for nothing that I've done, just by the accident of my skin. You know, I look white, I sound white, and I get, you know, everything is okay for me. I'm not afraid of the police. They think they're going to help me. You know, we can go on and on about that. And then there's this...
I've got to jump in there with my story about a friend of mine who has a PhD in, a social psychologist, and we needed help because I was getting a flat tire. She wouldn't go near a policeman. I mean, she was as white can be, because she grew up in the 60s with the no-knock laws, and she had no trust of the police, whereas I came up with never having to worry. I've never done anything that I cared if anybody came in or not, but at any rate, I was like, a policeman are there, they're there to take care of me. Entirely different view. And I was really surprised. I've heard this also from other friends of mine who have been not necessarily African American, but have been obviously part of a counterculture. I mean, they wore the uniform, to be described that way. And, you know, it would be male particularly. And they always had the eye of the man on them. So it's...
Audrey, I think trust is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that person would have known the police officer...
Right, right.
Then everything would have been different. And trust would have been there. And I think you have to start and begin with that trust between people. And if you don't have that, it's almost like you have no foundation to work from... and move up higher.
And that's what we hope to have people bring this, as I said, be brave enough to trust so that we're having a conversation that I can feel comfortable enough that my partner or my conversant will forgive me immediately if I say something that is just totally offensive and I have no idea that it might be.
That trust factor, you can see it in the animal world. Mm-hmm. For example, you can have two arch enemies,
mm-hmm.
a tiger and a bear. If we had a room where the two of them were let into and they didn't know each other, there'd be problems. They'd fight, and
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
one of them would probably wind up killing the other.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the same two animals, the bear and the tiger, and if they were born at the same time and put together as cubs, and they grew up together, they could...
And were allowed to stay together.
Yeah, allowed to stay together, there would not be a problem.
Right. And maybe would just dislike each other on a personal basis, which is fine.
Right,
they
right.
trust each other. But
right.
but the issue with that
I get along with my brother so well.
Right. But the issue with that is that this conversation that we're having, we were not all born together. We were born at different
right.
times, different
right.
place, different experiences. And part of what we now have to do is try to... almost manufacture. I mean, how do you manufacture trust? And that's really, really difficult. The one thing and the point that I'm interested in is, you know, there is this huge fire that's going on the coast of North Carolina. And what I just went down to the beach a couple of, about a month ago. And part of what happens is in a case of a huge fire that's pushing through the forest, this, you know, fictitious tiger and this fictitious bear all of a sudden don't worry about their natural tendencies. They worry about this larger enemy.
Right, right.
And they at least all go in the same direction at least for a time.
You bring up a good point.
And what I'm interested in is my biggest concern is that there is a metaphorical fire going on right now called our economy, that if we don't, and I mean, I'm thinking much more on a national level, but it is definitely going on here in Carrboro, that if we don't have at least put some of those lines of communication across race in place, that we will not be able to, quote unquote, compete in this global economy that we're really, truly in.
Well, I think, folks, you're getting a good taste of what's going to happen next Monday. And we have a number of people who are scheduled to come in. We have people from the Board of Aldermen. We have clergymen. We have people who are just familiar with the area. And
good old-fashioned racists. Yes, you're too welcome to come on down here and spew your spite so that we get an opportunity to...
To label you.
Richard, I would say with what you're talking about with the economy, I believe, would be like the heart of a person. And if you have a weak heart, you're going to have all kind of problems with your health. The government and the laws would be like your brain. And yes, we have got to address the economy in this country, because if the economy is weak and doesn't get better or stronger, we're all going to suffer.
Well, see,
we have to have a strong economy.
I can see where you might think of the economy as the heart, but I think more of the economy is my stomach myself.
Right, I got to eat. Right.
And unfortunately, I'm just going to throw in there that difficulties in the economy are more divisive than they are unifying.
Yes.
Because as soon as people think there is increased scarcity, they're going to start wondering to scrabble and make sure they have theirs.
There is a...
We've got to teach. We've got to learn.
In fact, I'm hearing it right now. There is this program called ICE that Charlotte is about to engage in. And what they're doing is that all illegal aliens that have actually already been tagged, they're saying, come in now, and we're going to kick you out of the country, but we're gonna send you home nicely, but you got to go. Mm-hmm.
That was a KKK move back in Siler City well over some years ago when they had a demonstration. That is what the KKK wanted to do then, was to kick out all the, quote, illegal aliens. Was we had this influx of Mexicans. And the thing is that I think, of course, I'm from California. So I was really happy to see all these Mexicans move into the area, because it made me feel like California. Yeah.
I think the difference between the KKK piece 4 or 5 years ago is that was from an ideological base. I think what you're finding now, it's from an economic base, or at least from a perceived economic base. Mm-hmm. That folks are saying, okay, gas prices are high. Mm-hmm. What are these people doing here anyway? They're taking away from my taxes.
People get scary. When they're scared, they get scary.
Right. And
we've already suffered from the use of the scare tactics, with having foisted upon us one of the longest wars in our histories, and also one of the most destructive. By having wasted all this money on this war, and apparently we're going to continue, even with a change in administration, we're going to continue wasting money on these foreign wars. We're using our tax dollars instead of for enhancing our social programs, making our schools better, making our economy better, and so forth and so on. We're bleeding ourselves into the biggest debtor nation in the world, and we're held hostage now pretty much by European and Chinese.
I've got to jump in on this, because it's kind of leads us into books again.
Oh.
Over the weekend, I listened to Vincent Bugliosi, who was the one who prosecuted the Manson case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is very well known. Anyway, he has a new book out, published in May. And it is, I forget the exact wording of the title, but it is putting President Bush up for a case for murder. It's accusing President Bush of murder. And in the book, and I was just through listening to this on Bookspan on the TV over the weekend, the premise being that he has a book full of documented information that it is quite obviously that Bush and his cohorts, and he names Cheney and
Condoleezza. Okay, if you want to be so kind.
And in a court of law, he is criminally
responsible
for the death of everybody that has been involved in this war. Innocents, both on both sides.
On both sides.
As well as our soldiers.
Yeah.
And that he is actually looking to bring President Bush up on charges of murder. First degree.
And actually, I like that somebody who's got, you know, the legal credentials to push this kind of debate forward is happy. I, of course, like to look at the religious right that put him into office. It was their swing vote that created him, particularly in the second go-round. And with the use of, he is pro-life, he will change the abortion laws. Of course, he did no such thing. And what you did is you showed somebody that you thought represented your religious things to be one of the most morally bankrupt leaders in our country's history.
Do you say that according to the book that we've been going through this past week called Finding God Again by John J. Shea?
Yeah.
That's the title, remember? That this is an adolescent God that he worships, and he is a man who is still in his adolescent stage, where God and he are working on a superego, authoritarian, according to that basis.
Yeah. But one of the things that I find very interesting about how this all weaves together, and what it to me points to, is just how difficult it is to pull apart race without talking about gender, without talking about class, is that, you know, Jesse Helms just passed.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse Helms set the template that Karl Rove used to win in the last two elections. Mm-hmm. It is this idea of fear. Mm-hmm. Jesse Helms said it based on African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Karl Rove won it based on gays.
Mm-hmm.
Gays, the ability to, and be clear, and you're very right, after they set this fear in middle America, not necessarily here in North Carolina, but North Carolina was fell right in line with this piece.
Yeah, we have, you know, North Carolina has been voting red for quite a while. It's kind of hard to think of red as Republican.
Well,
better red than dead. Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
not.
Well, we have, but let's be clear, not here in Carrboro.
Yeah. Right.
Carrboro,
right.
We're very, it's very, very blue here.
Oh yeah, we almost got Kucinich in. I mean, we voted for him.
Oh really?
Him.
Yeah. I'm still thinking about actually writing him in. Kucinich.
I mean, he represents a very deep form of populist values, which is one of the values. I mean, everybody thinks that, you know, it's Commie Hill up in Chapel Hill, but actually it's a bunch of, you know, wine-sipping wealthy people living up on the hill there. And all of us, ones who roll down the hill, I represent these good old working-class populist views. Which is
now let's not stereotype. Let's not stereotype.
I'm sorry. I got these stereotypes.
Rocco's trying to jump in here.
Talking about the administration, we've had the Bush administration now for 7.5 years. What do you believe has been their, what's their end game? What have they been trying to accomplish in
preservation,
the last 7.5 years?
Preservation of their own privileged position and those like them.
And if anybody's thinking of not voting for Obama for whatever reasons, and I've actually talked to more people locally about that than anything else lately, and I'm surprised that some of my thought were at least
we as a station cannot as a nonprofit station cannot come out and endorse
anyone.
Right.
Well, okay. Well, I'm just going to say, keep
so.
In
as
mind
individuals we can't.
As individuals.
Keep
right.
in mind, however, keep in mind. That one of the things that will happen in the next 4 years, with the next person who's next elected, is the change in the Supreme Court. We do not need a bunch of authoritarian law, rigidly things that may prevent the legal growth and humane change in law in the United States if we continue to elect these incredibly hidebound. Literalists about the law. The Supreme Court in itself is important enough
to be very careful.
To be
about
very careful about who we
vote.
Elect, because if you think that you're going to that McCain is a viable candidate, think about the Supreme Court and vote Obama.
Yes,
that is my personal opinion.
Okay, thank
by
you.
By Paul
not connected
Dodge.
With WCO.
Not to get
in any way,
WC,
shape, or form.
It's my personal religious opinion.
You know what's interesting? You know, you say that, and, you know, Clarence Thomas has this book out. You know,
you know, Clarence Thomas, people believe is African American. He is. I mean, his skin type. But when you actually read his book, when you actually get, there is enough hate and venom and even just misunderstanding.
I mean, in himself about himself. Well, that, by the way, was, you know, some of the greatest in Hitler's Germany. Some of the greatest anti-Semites were Jews, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this kind of self-loathing that comes from so there are a number of African Americans who are incredibly self-loathing in the way that Clarence Thomas says it comes with systemic oppression. It's one of the results of it. It's a small percentage, but it's true. It's true in it's true, as I said, with Jews too.
I was having a conversation with my uncle, who's been working in very very good man. He was working in this a lumber company plant for 35 mm-hmm. years. I'm 36. He started when I was 1 year old. He starts to tell me how there's this one brother who, he says, if there is a white person in the room, he will find a way to kiss his butt. Mm-hmm. This is the way it works. Mm-hmm. And so he's explaining this to me. And he says, you know, he says, but I have to live here. So he starts talking about Jesse Helms and how there are one or two African-Americans who will come out and support Jesse Helms, even though, you know, every piece of legislation that mm-hmm. Jesse Helms was about mm-hmm. was not helpful, not in any type of self-interest mm-hmm. for African Americans. How do you do this? And I'm like, I don't understand. I am all about self-interest. I understand what that means. How do you go against your own self-interest? And he mm-hmm. says, well, they're self-interest in keeping a job. That's right. What he says. Right. And so, you know, and if you're against Jesse Helms in North Carolina, particularly in rural North Carolina, where yeah. I'm from, then, you know, you're going to lose your job. Then
you
what
know
do you
what
do?
This does to a person inside? I mean, talking about psychological and emotional health, what it does to someone internally to have to constantly be twisted in that way in order to survive. I mean, it's sickening to know that this happens so often. It's awful.
Yeah, actually, my mother, you know, so, you know, I was thinking about this. One of the things that my mother did, and I think she got the message, I think, from the way she was raised, but also some of her early experiences as a married woman with my father. My father was drafted and was in the Navy, and he wanted, you know, to get off the ship he was on. So my mother, he told my mother to write a letter to the Defense Department, saying that, you know, he was the sole provider of the household and he shouldn't be in line of danger. So they immediately tagged her as a Red, and she got this, and you know, and she had also worked for the state, so she knew about these authoritarian things. Mm-hmm. And what happened is, when she went back to work after she left my father when I was a young teenager, and she was, you know, looking for a career that was going to, she could work for a bank, and she registered as a Republican. Now, my mother's no Republican. My mother, you know, Mom, if you're listening, I know you. I'm curious about, but you were this Republican, and the reason she was a Republican is not because she had Republican values. She didn't want them to have anything to use against her. She wanted to survive in that job.
So you put on the colors of the group.
You put on the colors of the group, make no waves. And, you know, in fact, she was so efficient in her job that she ended up doing, she was doing the, when they transferred her from any position, you know, she loved to tell me these stories, that they would have to replace her with 2.5 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, and because she was really efficient. She went and did her work, unlike most of us who are not so efficient.
Well, do you think that governments, countries, large groups of people, small groups of people, basically just act as individuals with regard to the experience that each of these groups encounter related to the way we as individuals relate? For example,
are you saying do groups relate?
I think they do.
One to the other as individuals relate. Okay.
Well, if you take a look at parents or individuals that are child beaters, most of those people have been beaten mm-hmm. when they were a child.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very, very high correspondence
sins
level
of the fathers
right.
visited upon
another,
the children.
If you were beaten as a child, there's a very high indication that maybe you might beat your child.
That's how you learn to deal with conflict or problems.
Exactly, from your individual experience. Governments, let's take countries that have been bombed by mm-hmm. other countries, mm-hmm. even though the other country possibly is trying to help that country.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, by bombing it, yeah.
Those people...
Thank you.
Those
so
people
much.
Are not going to have a high regard for that country no matter what happens.
And how do you think they want to react?
They want that other
they
country...
They want to bomb back.
Right, if right. they can.
Right. It's interesting. I just watched... Has anyone seen Charlie's War? The
no,
movie
I
or
haven't.
Read the book.
No, no.
It's actually very interesting. Basically, he's sitting at this nexus. The Congress as a whole has to vote on up or down on the money, but they don't know where the money's going. Mm-hmm. Starts out at $5 million. He pushes it over a series to, this is back in 1980. Goes from 1980 to about 1987.
That's right.
And then what happens is that it goes from $5 million to about $50 million. And what they do is they take these funds from the U.S. government, funnel it through a series of intermediaries, and get weapons to go into Afghanistan. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
They then take these, most of the time, Russian weapons and kick out the
Russians. Yeah.
This mm-hmm. is during the Cold War when mm-hmm. America.
Which is what we were doing, is what the Russians were doing when with the Vietnamists. They were funding.
Right. America is the number one arms distributor in this world.
But
it has been.
But for me, the most interesting point to this piece was that the CIA operative said to Charlie after this thing was over, and we actually quote unquote won. Oh, mm-hmm. the Russians got pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
You now have to build this country back up.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of his, he was on a small committee of nine, said, no, man, we've already given you all this money. The work has been done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just the, okay.
That's very short-sighted of the
part. It's very short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
And what we as Americans.
And what we created was the Taliban. We created vacuum.
We created the vacuum that the Taliban, well, number one, we trained them. And see, now I had heard this before.
Yeah, we
yes.
did. Yeah,
we do.
Did train.
Yes.
We've trained.
Bin Laden was trained
we've
by
trained
the CIA.
Exactly. We have exactly. trained Latin American dictators from day one.
Yeah.
But see, part of the issue with that, for me, is that then that comes right down to the individual basis. We aren't spending. It's a problem that I have to learn this from a movie. That I'm not following enough about the global. What's going on in this world mm-hmm. politically that I haven't made the connection between money that we spent 20 years ago
mm-hmm.
and the problems that we're having right now.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with what Bush has done, as opposed to talking and working seriously about terrorism,
mm-hmm.
it was about oil.
Mm-hmm.
And going in, this was not about terrorism.
You're listening, by the way, to WCOM 103.5 FM.
Richard,
this is your community radio station. and if by any chance you would like to voice a different opinion, please give us a call.
Yeah.
What is our phone number?
929-9601.
Yeah, by the way, I mean, it's just because you have a bunch of left-leaning pinkos talking doesn't necessarily mean that our entire community is like I'm sorry, not pink.
We actually are mature adults who have gone past the super ego.
And past the stupid political stereotypes.
Again, this is a lead off to what is coming up next Monday from 9 until 12. Will be a whole special for WCOM.
But my point is that If we as individuals took the more time to understand what's going on a global standpoint, perhaps we would have recognized that, yes, our hands were dirtied in trying to get Russia out, number one. Number two, that we should have invested these people who got killed fighting a war for us and what we believe, fighting for our quote-unquote American way,
then yes, there is something owed there. We need to spend some money. Now, there can be a large and long conversation and even argument about how much money that is, how much of, you know, we need to invest.
Well, very little. I mean, for instance, there was a this goes way back. And I'm talking back to '68.
Senior scholar over there.
Yeah, back in '68 when, you know, I was a young 20-year-old. And you know, Johnson wiped out a free milk program for kids, all kids in the United States, which and the cost of that whole program was one B-52 bomber. And you know, and you know, and it was like, oh, you know, we got to have this war, you know, that he was emphasizing. Now that's just one little example from a long time ago, but this weird sense of priorities where we would rather create destruction. Mm-hmm. And the thing about destruction, which is pernicious in our capitalist society, is we make money two ways: building things and destroying things. We keep destroying things so that we can rebuild things.
And in
that
the
means
end of that,
that someday that we're gonna have a social policy in which the idea is to go through and bomb parts of America so we can
rebuild it,
economically prosper rebuilding it.
But now, the thing then is,
you know,
in that process, we're destroying the planet.
It would work better if we did it that way.
Yeah.
It would actually work better if we did it that way, because the way that we do it right now, we wait too long. Look at, Obama's coming up with this grand idea of, you know, improving upon all this infrastructure that we have. We have bridges, you know, mm-hmm. failing, and almost all the bridges across the nation get like a C grade,
mm-hmm.
and yet still, that, you know, we can spend billions of dollars over overseas, but we can't find. I mean, but we had, you know, even when we had a Democrat, we could not find the willpower to spend that type of money on education,
and
on infrastructure,
that's right.
Right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very, very interesting that we were able to make that decision very easily. Our whole U.S. of A said, oh, we had 3,000 people die in 9/11, and we're going to spend billions of dollars. In hindsight, this is what we decided.
Mm-hmm.
2,000 people died. We're going to protect our way of life. We're going to spend billions of dollars. And yet, our infrastructure that we now live in is crumbling around us.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is now how many billions are we going to spend on that infrastructure?
There's another thing. Like the other thing, which is where the shame of the world is, that we have the best and the worst medical system in the world. That is so poorly socially conceived that it's literally imploding, and it cannot support itself, it cannot last, and yet and the only way to cure it, the best sure cure is basic medical care, 100%, everyone's covered.
Mm-hmm.
not work dependent, you know, not this dependent, not that dependent, but that's the basic way that it can
be
done.
Paul, I think the reason why we don't have that is because of greed.
There's another reason that goes back to the point of next week's shows, racism.
There's racism, there's greed, the
thing about it is that we, as Americans, don't think of ourselves as a whole people. We think of ourselves as a partial people. There's me, and there's those other people that don't deserve, and the very spite that makes us think or feel that there's anyone, and race is the big excuse. It's the big phony excuse that we use most of all in our feelings and our justifications mm-hmm. for somebody being different. They can be immigrants, but as long as we feel that some people don't deserve, we're cutting our own throat when it comes to having a just and fair society mm-hmm. for everyone and for yourselves.
Right. Yay!
All solved.
It's starting to get warmed
all
up.
All solved.
Yes,
well, you know,
yes.
In this international realm.
Next week, we're going to stick to Carborough.
Yes.
Stay with Carborough.
Yes.
Stay
we're
with Carborough.
We're going to try to stick
very,
to Carborough.
Very
yes,
hard.
Yes.
But we know
because
that.
This is where we're going. This is a point I want to make. This is where we can act.
Yes.
This is where we can take the step. It's not just coming up with theories or brilliant knowledge about how things should work. We want to come up with something. What can you do? And one of the things I hope to put together for next week is something that I use in my practice, actually, and it's called the SMART card. And it's a way of setting a goal and finding one a small goal, just a small little thing, and a number of steps to take to achieve that goal, simple steps. And I would hope to pass this out to everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm going to print it up so it looks like it's connected with this particular subject, so that we don't spend a lot of our energy talking about what things are wrong, but spend some of this energy saying, what little thing can I do? I mean, as little a thing sounds little as having a conversation where two people agree to trust one another, to forgive one another ahead of time for stupidities they might utter, and to get together as human beings. That sounds little, but it's humongous. Mm-hmm. And that's where things start. So that's what I want to focus on next week. Let's stay here.
One thing that all responsible adults need to do is to vote for the right candidate, the strongest people. And I'm not talking about the presidential race.
Right.
I'm talking about every election there is, whether right. it's for the school board, county right. commissioner, sheriff, across the board.
Get involved.
We need to vote for good, solid, mm-hmm. intelligent, responsible people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will wind up interpreting the law, making the law, mm-hmm. and deciding which way the community, the country, is going to take the turns and go.
And put people up there who are accessible, who are not going to sit up there and say, we are the clique, we are the authority.
Well, I mean, class often becomes an issue in mm-hmm. local races, in the sense that mm-hmm. The have-it-alls think that their position is to, you know,
keep it all.
is to maintain it all for themselves.
Right. How many sure. people have you heard? Well, my door is always open. The door mm-hmm. is open. Mm-hmm. Well, it might be, but their mind
their ears
is
are
usually
closed. Yeah.
Right. Their door is open, but their mind is closed.
Excellent.
There's an issue around who can run. If you were, say, for example, a working class person mm-hmm. who works a straight 9 to 5 or even 9 to whatever, how hard is it for you to do that, plus perhaps raise kids as right. well as run for office? People who are damn well organized.
I would say it takes cooperation. I'm thinking about our mayor, who has 2 children and has a full-time job, and he's an attorney, and he works with Community Realty, and I don't know what his wife does, but I'm assuming she's all similarly involved. But it's a flexible. See, he's working for himself.
Right.
He doesn't have to be there at 9 a.m.
Right.
And then clocking out at 5 p.m. So,
and most of us who can be in daytime radio tend to have jobs that allow us a little flexibility,
right.
like my
right.
internet job, you uh-huh. know. Allows right. me to work at 4 o'clock in the morning when I feel like it. You
uh-huh.
know?
So it's maybe a selective thing about who gets a voice.
In power now in this community are going to be making very, very important decisions mm-hmm. that are going to affect this community years down the road.
And we're specifically with the idea of developing better mass public transportation and good public transportation grids.
Mm-hmm.
And also designing the infrastructure more so that it's pedestrian and bicycle friendly.
Mm-hmm.
and small vehicle friendly. The more we do that, and which is something that Carville has done mm-hmm. to some degree in the past and hopefully will continue to do, the more we actually become a city of the future, because that is the future of cities in in the world.
And I want to get a little bit, jump in a little bit to what Richard just said about how do you run for office. You may not be able to run for office. Mm-hmm. I mean, the exigencies of life and putting food on the table, et cetera. However, what you can do, and it is paramount that you do, is learn about who is running for office. Find out what they're doing. Find out what their standings are, their opinions, what the issues, et cetera, and vote. Get out and vote. I mean, small municipal elections are not necessarily highly taken advantage of.
Publicized, yes, and very small clicks can make a big change in the area. I mean, the fact of the matter was is that the religious right was very strongly oriented towards becoming more politically involved. This is about 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, the first area that they began to make inroads to, and it's still the place where they still have the strongest toehold, is in Board of Education. So you have many people who represent very conservative religious opinions, attempting to dictate the ethos of what is educatable in our society, which has created problems. I mean, it's created problems in that there's been a systemic opposition to a proper sexual education that needs to be dealt with. And, you know, and given the age of AIDS, you're putting everybody's life is in
and this intense. Brings up another idea I've had was we might our three morning shows on Monday, and again this is something I haven't discussed with anybody yet, but we might just decide that maybe quarterly we'll do another Carlboro Talks about sexuality, do this.
Gender would be a good one to talk about.
Gender is really difficult, particularly as an African American male. Mm-hmm. There's all these examples of where, you know, when a quote unquote a black man was actually able to take power, mm-hmm. oftentimes that power is actually taken away from mm-hmm. women, mm-hmm. and so there's all these examples of it. I'm thinking of the black church. I'm mm-hmm. thinking of all these different situations. And so it's like, you know, when you actually give someone who's starved for something mm-hmm. that's actual power, you know, what do they didn't do? Mm-hmm. They do
We have some that's limited, we have limited views of what power is. And one feminist, whose name, of course, I'm not going to remember, but came with this, that there are three styles of power. One of which is the one that we think of as power, which is power over, you know, the power to mm-hmm. decide. But there's two other styles of power that need to be recognized. And women are good at recognizing another one of them, which is the power among. This is democracy. This is also cooperation and mutuality. This is where people gather together and work together. And that's a very different style of power. See, people with power over think that's what they're making these people do. Mm-hmm. It's actually not that. The idea is for the power over people who have some kind of vision or some access to some resources is to see where the power among people want to be ignited mm-hmm. and work with them. That's mm-hmm. that's a mutuality. That's bringing in both models. Mm-hmm. Then there's another power, which is the one that we usually talk about on my show, which is the which is we'll call the power from within, right?
Uh-huh.
You know? And this
uh-huh.
is the power of realizing that inside yourself you are precious, divine, and special, and that is your gift to the uh-huh. community, and that is a unique contribution, you know. Of course, obviously, considering how many writers we have discovered many people are using this unique power to scribble down their thoughts. Mm-hmm. Perhaps another way would be also, besides scribbling our thoughts down or talking about them on the radio, we need to occasionally get together and foment change.
Well, it's, you know,
healthy change.
Another thing that I'm thinking might come out of what we're doing here next week is maybe just asking people, are you willing to be part of or to lead and organize an ongoing community discussion group? This can be, it doesn't have to involve the whole community. It can be small groups here and there. But let's start talking.
Yeah, maybe.
And listening.
And that might be like at the farmer's market, have a little conversational forum.
That's an, yeah, or that's an also, place to and the really, really, really free market. That's the yeah. first and the, Saturday
the,
of every month.
And the other one would be to have a regular a series of people meeting just right over here at Weaver Street, where uh-huh. we're outside, uh-huh. you know, where the riffraff. It's just a matter of organizing yourself.
It's also a matter of will. You know, I think that we have to have the will to do
right.
it. I think a lot of times these conversations, not so today on Audrey's show, but these conversations become, they can become strained and difficult
mm-hmm.
When people don't necessarily
have the will to change.
I think you're wrong. I think you're bogus. I think you're, it's interesting to me. I'll see an article, say, for example, it's on the USA Today, Time Magazine, the New York Times, you know, talking about race, and then there'll be this series of comments afterwards, and it's just this spewing of hate. And I'm not sure if it's because people feel like they're sitting behind a computer somewhere that they can actually
say anything,
what's amazing though is that those are usually representative of, they don't pick the worst ones to publish, they pick representative ones to publish, right.
Representative of what they get, what as they the get universe. In. Yeah.
That's why and what that's, we're doing here is very important.
Yeah, and
very important.
And what I find is I'm always wondering is, well, where are the people who actually have common sense? Who have actually thought through
uncommon sense.
right. I mean, where are those, how come I'm not seeing any of those commentary? Or, you know, my biggest concern is our silence mm-hmm. is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I remember when 9/11 happened, and I was really concerned when what's-his-name got elected in the first place, because it was such a fiasco.
What's his name?
Yeah.
Do you read the Harry Potter books? It's yeah. the name that cannot be mentioned.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Then
who shall remain nameless.
Yeah, that's right. And I remember the day or 2 days after, you know, we had a big march right here in Chapel Hill, which is no war. It was an anti-war march. And, you know, it was covered a little bit, but it was ignored. And the thing was, of course, the thing was, is we had had foisted upon us this, an utterly, they have never paid any attention to the popular sentiment. And they have blatantly lied, manipulated. But the thing was, I said that was going to happen. I remember getting up at the Ethical Culture Society, and I said, this is what's going to happen. I said, because of this guy, he's going to create a war over a criminal offense.
But if you remember, his first 80, 90 days in office, he was, because of the whole way the actual election went down, he was just sitting in the middle of the water, dead calm.
It was doing
nowhere
nothing.
To go, nothing to do. And I think that what 9/11 gave him was a purpose. And perhaps what, as we talk about this stuff, I think one of the things, the book you all were talking about earlier, Man in Search of the Meaning of Life, this whole idea of when you start to grab onto these ideas and hold them too closely and identify with them too stringently, it causes, you know, dis-ease within yourself and in this case, with the rest of the world, given his position of power.
Yes, exactly.
This is how we squeeze our conscience into a superego.
Yes.
Paul,
we've got just a few minutes left. Forget, this is the sign-off, and this is a great sign-off for the Counselor's Cafe, and yeah, I appreciate you.
Epitaph. This is an epitaph for the for the wonderful psychological insight.
Yes.
And
Paul and Richard and Rocco, I'm so pleased that you're all part of this.
I can sleep in on Mondays for a couple of Mondays now.
Well, Paul and Richard and Audrey, this is why I'm saying it's so important who we elect. And I think a lot of folks, they don't think about the power that these people mm-hmm. have. They have the power to make the law
mm-hmm.
and change existing laws and interpret the law. And in many offices, I feel like the people in power can justify almost anything mm-hmm. with regard to this international question. There's two axioms out there. One has always been there are no permanent friends or permanent enemies in international affairs mm-hmm. between countries. Mm-hmm. And you can just look at the last 100 or 200 years and see that. Mm-hmm. Or, of course, go further back. And then, besides that, the idea of disengaging and pulling out and having nothing to do with the rest of the world, that argument always gets challenged by, well, if we don't get involved, then the world out there is going to change for sure, mm-hmm. and it's going to change in ways that are not going to be to our advantage mm-hmm. or to help us, so we've got to be engaged. But again, it goes back to who the leadership is to make the decisions to engage us correctly, properly, wisely, mm-hmm. so we don't have these problems and mistakes that get made that cost billions and trillions of dollars and millions of lives.
You know,
this also speaks, as we're talking now, the value of community radio.
Yes.
Because what we're doing here is giving voice to the people. We are the people. And one of the first things that people who want to take control will do is take control of the media. Take control of the information that is available to the people. That's one of the reasons why supporting, I'll go a little push, supporting for community radio keeps us alive instead of having to constantly rely on homogenized pap that comes through corporate media.
And unfortunately, this also means some of our other member-supported radio stations mm-hmm. that are more homogenized in terms of what they give us than mm-hmm. what we would like to see in terms of diversity. I remember there's an axiom that I use, which is basically distrust any good that needs evil to justify it.
The thing is that.
If something is good, it is good in itself, and it is self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't create enemies.
Mm-hmm. Well, it might create enemies, but it's,
well, if it's going to create enemies, it's going to create enemies for people who are obviously oriented towards whatever their self-interest or status quo is.
You could be not necessarily judged by your friends, the company you keep, but also judged by the people who are your enemies.
but the other thing is, if you have a good that needs evil to justify it, it's not a good. The good that we were sold to deal with the war and terrorism is not a good. It is as evil as the acts that created it, and we have to remember that when the fear card is played, we're being manipulated.
Okay,
anytime
people,
the fear card is being played. Oh, we're out of time.
We're closing off.
Audrey, let me close the door.
Thank you so much.
That was the door closing on Counselor's Cafe.
Thank you very much, Audrey.
Thank you for being here. Thank you. And listen next week to Carborough Talks About Race, starting at 9 a.m. We're going straight through till noon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the start of something new.
Great.
Carborough Book Beat, September 1st.